Okay.
They didn't make any test orders, so make any.
No objections to that whatsoever.
You couldn't, when they were here, it's a very complicated line of communications you seem to work on. You know, if there is a problem and I've broken the law in some way, I feel as they should be dealing with the police. And these couple of guys came in uniforms that they almost looked like policemen, but they explained to me that they were really...
Wardens.
Okay. Now, tell me the line of communication where the whole thing is three parts.
Right? There's three people, it raises three organisations. There's a licensing board for applications, and there's a licensing body issues applications and so forth. There is the Bureau of Consumer Affairs, which effectively administers most of the Act. Okay, it's more or less an enforcement. It is involved in the licensing side as well. Okay, now if you're not licensed, that falls into our jurisdiction. You should be licensed. We've got to follow it through. The Road Traffic Authority is mainly concerned with the roadworthiness of vehicles, but they do have jurisdiction to report on the other aspects, such as Form 4s and all this sort of business, unlicensed dealing. That was an area that was originally in the Road Traffic Authority's ambit, I understand anyway, before the Motor Vehicle Dealers Act was promulgated, I think it was in 72. It used to be the Used Cars Dealers Act, which was administered wholly and solely by the Road Traffic Authority. Now it's administered jointly by us and them, but theirs is a low key type of thing. They'll go around the yards and they'll find a car. If it's not roadworthy, I'll sticker it. I'll check if they're entitled to check your stock register to make sure that's been maintained in accordance with the Act. And they could warn you on Form 4 breaches. I believe I could even prosecute you, but the Commissioner is the person named in the Act to enforce those particular areas.
The Commissioner of what?
Consumer Affairs.
Okay.
That the Commissioner embraces, or the Bureau embraces, about 8 statutes, among them the Motor Vehicle Dealers Act. And High Purchase Act, door-to-door selling, and so forth. But what we're primarily concerned, of course, is with the Motor Vehicle Dealers Act and the reports that come through to us from time to time on unlicensed stealing. And unlicensed stealing, as you're probably well aware of, not only constitutes the backyard operator, but also dealers themselves who don't renew their licence. That's what they've reported about you, that you haven't renewed your licence, I think, for some 2 years.
Oh, yeah, I just see the whole thing as a fraud and a sham, you know, sort of. Well, you know, it restricts competition, and that can't really be good.
How is that?
Well, you know, it's most business sort of encourages the formations of cartels that prevent competition, and this probably is, to a degree, exactly that.
You don't see there's a restriction or a piece of legislation that by making dealers licensed and so forth, you could omit the person to indulge in undesirable practices. You don't see it that way at all?
Well, I'm simple-minded. Perhaps I see myself as a car dealer being responsible to my clients. I guess what I was saying was that, you know.
Now I've got one in here too.
Jeez, what is it?
Same as that.
It's going to explode.
It is, I think. Does it work?
Well, stand back. There's a.
I'm going to blow up.
Going in his pocket. It's going to blow up any minute. It's going.
That's right. Oh, use mine too. Yeah. That's right.
Sure. That's right. Like a James Bond movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was saying, here I feel that I've got a responsibility to my clients, okay? That's okay. And they're pretty hard to keep happy sometimes, you know? They're a pretty good arrangement there. Then I've got another responsibility to my principals, who sort of train us and, you know, you just can't be a dealer unless you sort of meet all these sort of requirements. We've got a guy coming up tomorrow on this after-sale servicing and, you know, make sure we meet these various requirements now. If a guy wants to survive, the only way to do it is to keep those people happy and keep those people happy. Now, where the hell are we going to sort of bring in another line of responsibility to sort of cloud the whole issue. Well, there. Now, if I'm guilty of fraud, if I let a client down or I misrepresent something to a client, surely the legitimate law courts are there to take care of me as a criminal.
Well, there's such a thing as a civil action, right, which is outside the ambit of the Police Act. Right? And
civil action.
Well, all right, let's put it this way. If you sell a person a motor car and he disputes that it's roadworthy, for example, okay, now his action against you is not through the police department, it's through the civil courts.
Mm.
Now, because of the, and since you brought it up, I'll go into my knowledge of it, but my role is not to talk on policy, but this is just my knowledge and interpretation.
This is, you know, to me,
I'd like to explain this to you.
Easy sort of a thing,
right.
Now, and right. I, you know, I think that's, if we can make those two lines,
keep
a good
that.
Relationship
yeah,
going,
sure.
Then we will survive. If we let a breach develop between either of those lines, between our clients or our principals, then we won't survive, and that's the name of the game.
Right? Yeah, but I see the licensing requirements, I can't see, will interfere anywhere along here, particularly with a new car franchise, which you predominantly are, right?
Mm.
But
you've got to know who you're responsible to.
Well, you right. Become a licensed dealer, and then you're responsible to acting within the requirements of that act, right? But that just simply means that if you're an honest businessman, that there's no imposition on you anyway, right?
Well, you've got to pay your protection money, haven't you?
Well, the license costs about $160 a year, you know.
See, this you know, it's been explained to me before, and some of the other big motor vehicle dealers are like this. They like a situation where you pay, you know, so like say it's $200 a year, that really buys you 12 months of government granted protection against any other guy who hasn't paid his $200.
Protection against them?
Yeah, protection against competition from them. See, the bigger dealers in Perth don't like the little guys. They don't like the situation where a little service station on the corner can sell a car because they say that guy has got smaller overheads than they have, and that's what they call unfair competition.
I can see that argument, but what we're looking at, of course, is the smaller little guy who'll sell a car, he might even be able to guarantee title. You know, if he's not a licensed dealer, we've got no comeback against him unless we act against him under the provision of this Act, which say, okay, you're an unlicensed dealer, we can act on your behalf.
If you sell a car and he hasn't got a title to it, is that where the ordinary courts of law can... he's surely broken a law that doesn't require a special act.
Yeah, but if you know that he's got to sue against the person he purchased it from, that involves a long chain, that is now covered in the Motor Vehicle Dealers Act.
Yeah.
And... you know, and sure, I can appreciate your argument.
Is there a deficiency in the actual legitimate law courts of the country, is there, that we've had to bring in this sort of other legislation?
Well, I'd
say
that the prime reason was not so much because of the competition, but because of the great occurrence of undesirable practice, people buying cars that... they had no title to, they go back to the dealer seeks corporate protection, he goes into liquidation, they've got, before they can go against his claim protection or claim in the courts against, say, $2 company or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the many problems that we're coming across. The other one is a dealer who has no financial resources and goes down the drain, and he's taken orders from people in amounts of $6,000 or $7,000, taken deposits, and he goes down the drain, he can't supply a car. This type of situation, which, you know, is happening, right? It might not be happening with you. You might have a different concept. You might be financially viable. I don't know.
You're
never in that sort of situation.
Celebrating our 83rd anniversary.
Okay. Fine. Well, the people, and this is perhaps based on experience of the metropolitan area, right? But this type of thing happens. Small dealers are going down the drain. The persons are coming in and say, what's there to protect us from a salesman telling me this car is a one-owner, 20,000-kilometre vehicle, and in actual fact, it's an ex-tax, and it's done 220,000 kilometres. This type of thing. And it's more or less saying, okay, if you're a salesman who's going to indulge in that sort of practice, you've got to be licensed to be in the industry. If you do that, you lose your licence, plus you're liable to the courts for any misrepresentation, and so forth. In effect, it's a control. That's what we look at. We're not here to hamper anything to do with enterprise. That's between you and your customers and any competition. If you're smarter than the next man, you're going to get business.
Yeah.
But that's the general concept as we see it.
Okay, well, no, can I ask another question? It's probably not related. Why are there two of you?
Why are there two of us?
It's a question I meant to ask when the other two guys came from the RPA, the other warden guys.
Well, simply workload situation. There's two of us. You're not the only person we've up here to see. You know, Kalgoorlie's a fairly big centre. It's got a number of dealers. Two of us work a lot better together. Two heads are better than one.
Oh, so you always operate...
Always in twos.
In twos. It's
interesting. It seems to be a controversy of statements, doesn't it, Mr. Max?
Is that always why you operate in two?
No, there's other reasons as well, but that's a departmental sort of approach.
But if we could get back to the question of licensing, you were recorded in the Motor Vehicle Dealers Licensing Board as being licensed up till December 78.
That's probably right.
And you didn't renew your licence, purely and simply because you thought...
I couldn't see what it, you know. I can see that some people don't like competition and want to be protected from it. No, that wasn't me. I was
saw it as a threat to competition, then, did you?
That's all.
I see. Were you aware?
I saw it as not a threat to me, but I saw the whole. I still do see the Motor Vehicle Dealers Licensing Board, and I went down and I interviewed them, or they interviewed me, or whatever it was, in Perth, you know, a couple of years ago, and you know, like, there was two guys from the big car dealers, they were the two representatives, and there's some other guy and some other guy, and I sort of got the impression that each of them were looking at something I think they got from the RAC or a motoring light, or one of those guys there, and he was interested. He was generally interested in consumer protection, you know. There's a public service guy on the board, and he was sort of probably interested in the job, you know, so like a nice unending job, and the other guys from the car dealers, you know, there's no doubt about it, they just loved it, and they said it's terribly respectable because it's supported by the Automotive Chamber of Commerce, and you know, you just can't have this unfair competition, and that's what they saw, these little guys in the service stations and things like that with lower overheads. That was to them, that was unfair competition. It might have been unfair to them, but it certainly wasn't unfair to the little guy. The little guy probably looks at those big blokes saying, great, bigger office, air conditioned, secretaries, cups of coffee and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, like, it really is hampering the freedom of choice to buy a car from wherever we choose to buy a car.
Well, if you look at the number of dealerships in Perth, I couldn't agree with that, because there's a large amount of them down there. The range of choice is very, very extreme. And it's only the controls are imposed that the little person who wants to make a business out of it is okay. He's got to be in a situation where he guarantees title, conforms with the Act, he doesn't pull in the undesirable practice and so forth. The little person can go into it. He can say, you want to sell 3, 4, 5, 6 cars. All he's got to do is apply to the board and get a licence, and he then falls under jurisdiction, and he can be controlled effectively as far as his practices are concerned. And that's the way we see it. We don't know
what
thinking.
Well, if you're a really little guy, you look at his balance sheet and you say, oh, no way in the world, mate, are you going to get a start, see?
That's up to the board. They look at those things. That's their purpose. Once the licence is issued, we look into any complaints. Now, of course, the little guy might not have a great knowledge of the business, and... Well, you get all sorts of problems. But again, I can see.
Probably object to government departments playing God on these things, you know. I think this.
Well, that's something.
An argument type to my views, as long as it doesn't sort of. As long as there's no victim, as long as nobody gets hurt by me having these particular views, and that's probably what we'll probably never. Philosophically, you'll never...
Well, we're obliged anyway, as I said, to discuss the matter with you about the unlicensing thing, and firstly to find out whether you intend to get to be licensed, notwithstanding the fact that you've been unlicensed for the past 2 years.
Well, that's what you'd like me to do, you get licensed.
Certainly would. We certainly would, otherwise, I mean, in all possibility... You could be prosecuted over this, and if you just ignore it, well, I don't know what would happen. We never had that situation.
Well, it is quite a serious offence, actually. If you don't have a license, you haven't been fined $100 a day. You haven't been on license for 18 months, was it?
Yes.
Taken strictly.
Who's calling, please?
As per the book.
One month.
80 months of an average of 30 days a month.
Alan Johnson from
$100 a day works out 54.
I think you're just giving me a rundown on the penalties, and that sounded pretty severe. Right?
Yeah.
There's a fine.
That's an additional
of something or other. Fine of what?
Maximum $3,000.
$3,000.
Max.
Max. Okay.
Plus $100 a day.
And that's where you got to the scary bit. You said that. It could be $100 a day multiplied by 18 months.
That adds up to $54,000, which is,
$54,000.
Not a lot of money, actually. that aside, you can just do
it. I still don't feel like a criminal.
No, I don't think. I think you're using the word wrongly. We're not what he is.
This is not a criminal code.
It's not a criminal code. No. It's a civil matter.
Yeah.
So, what I was trying to emphasise really is the fact that the other day, Act, that particular offence is one of the ones that stands out as particularly prominent. The fact of unlicensed dealing is the whole act revolving on the fact that they can initiate a reasonable amount of control on dealers as far as consumers are concerned and the dealers are not selling and dealing in vehicles. That's the whole essence of the thing, really, where a reasonable amount of control can be exercised and a listing can be kept. So if problems do arise, and as in the case of the Bureau, where the primary concern with consumers and problems with consumers, and we have to arbitrate these matters.
Yeah. Now, have you had any complaints about us from consumers?
I have one here.
One we're going to deal with later on.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, we're dealing with the unlicensed facet of the business.
Yeah.
This is what Rob's idea for this morning. So you have been, in fact, unlicensed for the last 18 months.
Oh, yes, there's no, made no secret of that.
Yeah. And it's on that grounds that you believe it impedes competition.
Oh, yeah, I just sort of see it as a fraud. I just know it.
You actually see it as a fraud?
Yeah, it's masquerading as consumer protection. I can see that really what it has done has lowered the cost. Price that people get for their cars when they trade them in, and it's increased the cost of the cars when the consumers buy them.
That's with the warranty you're talking about.
Including the provision of the warranty. Now, a lot of people don't really want to go. There's no doubt about it that it sort of is called consumer protection, but I think it's got to be qualified.
I'll correct it on a technicality. Consumer affairs now, it's not straight out protection. We look into matters where we're charged with being impartial. I mean, a dispute arises between a dealer and a consumer. We look at both sides of it. The dealers and the business houses aren't aware of the number of cases where we just simply tell the person they've got no grievance whatsoever.
Mm.
You're only aware when we come to you seeking your story, and then on the basis of what you put forward and what they say, we look in according to the statutes that we administer, or common law, or whatever. And that's all. So we don't consider ourselves an impeding factor to any genuine businessman. It's only the person who's up to no good that has any cause to worry about us. The person who's making,
So acceptance of a formal complaint is not grounds for prosecution or not grounds to assume that the trader is wrong by any means.
It just simply means we're charged to take complaints and investigate.
We are obliged to investigate official complaints, full stop.
Well, I think we've only had one sort of brush with a client. I think it went to this, is it called a small claims board or something, and Volvo sent the state engineer along. I didn't get a person to appear. He went along and appeared for us, and it was a rebuild of the guy's engine. The guy's under warranty. The guy didn't want his engine rebuilt. He wanted a brand new engine. But Volvo built the thing, from top to bottom, despite the fact that it was dubious why the engine failed. It seized, didn't have any water in it, but they I guess the client didn't win. I think what we did was sort of brilliant in a number of circumstances, and he went away happy, but he still wanted a brand new engine.
Well, you've got a number of used vehicles displayed out there. Have you had any warranty problems with it? Even though you have a license, are you still on your warranty?
Oh, we've got to usually go one better than regulation one, did you?
You usually go one better on one, so you've had no...
I don't just think that I'm sort of remaining what I just call myself an independent car dealer, you know, not... You know, and I think if you want to sort of remain as an independent, you've got to go one better. If anyone complains, you know, they've got a thing, we sort of patch it up, because the last thing I want is an unhappy client.
Fair enough. All right, well, if you've been unlicensed but still maintaining a business for the past 18 months and you're dealing in Volvos and Subarus, your turnover, was it great?
Well, we should force, you know. We'd probably sell nearly a car a week or something like that.
So you're looking at about 4 a month. That's a new vehicle.
Yeah, 3 to 4 a month.
What about used vehicles?
Oh, we don't really take a lot of used vehicles in. We used to say to the people, you know, this will give you, you know, say for say $1,500. For your trade-in, but if between now and the time you get your new car, you can sell it privately, we'll give you a $400 discount off your new car and things like that. And it is...
You'd rather shop the trade around, in other words.
It is amazing here. Once somebody knows somebody else's car is for sale, their mates sort of come in and say, oh, you know, that's a, he's not giving you enough, I'll give you $100 more, and the way it goes. So.
Do you maintain the stock register for used vehicles that's required by the Road Traffic Authority?
I don't know about that at all.
What are your provisions for 7 weeks?
Firstly, it's a binder that you record as all the vehicles that you've got when you've acquired them, who you got them from, and then who you dispose them from.
We got a very thorough record. Every car we sell has a client file. Every new car we sell has a client file. And in that client file goes all of the, like we give a photocopy of the client's license plate when he buys the new car, but in that same client file goes the copy of his license papers from his trading and the transaction. If somebody then buys that trading from us, all the details to do with that particular client are in that same client file. So if there's any correspondence or claims or replacements or anything like that, so that if there's a warranty thing, we replace something, so we know our costs. It's all thoroughly filed there, so that if and I think I would imagine that register is if somebody rings up and there's been a car stolen that's found in the bush at midnight or something, they'd ring us if it had a manor sticker on the note, and they'd say whose car is this. We could tell them, you know, we could give them the information they require. It's happened a couple of times, you know, cars have been stolen and deserted.
There's a number of reasons for it that it applies to the road traffic section of the Act as well as us. I mean, as far as our controls go in there.
Sure. I'll just quickly take them on this one. Can I ask another question? Is this also, does this protection racket cover trucks too?
Yeah.
Is that a...
It does. It's recently been amended back
then. I don't know, so we're very proud to be a truck dealer too.
Well, the truck dealers, of course, weren't too happy about it. But that's something that's still an ongoing thing. But the Act's been amended to cover caravan dealers and truck dealers.
So it's the same. It's the same Act.
Mm. And it's been amended to cover truck dealers and caravan dealers, but trucks don't carry the statutory warranty, but they do require a Form 4 just showing that some person can look at the truck and all of his details.
What's the Form 4?
Let's say notice of required particulars.
It's a little pink form that goes in the windscreen.
I've got a...
That's it there.
Someone's sending me something that I... Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I know what you're talking about. I didn't know what to call. We have got them here. Volvo have sent, we've got something coming that we've ordered several hundred of them, which I think is a great idea. It's like an upgraded version of that, because this little envelope hangs from the rear view mirror and you open the envelope and you've got a form in it like that. That is, that if you can read, yeah, you can read that thing. It really is a detailed performance check of all the 47 points that have been gone through and checked.
Is that on second hand?
Yes, this is not
on second hand.
This is on every second hand car. I want every second hand car with this full story, you know, of the car.
Well, that's a good idea. We don't
because I reckon that that's those pink things were a little bit light on. They're probably great because for a big car yard where they got 200 cars to do all that.
Mm.
You know, they'd have to have a bloke on it full time, but if we've got two or three cars, we can do more, you know.
That deals specifically with the year. This person knows what year he's getting, when it was first registered, the mileage that it was sold, you've got it displayed up, the mileage that applies when he actually takes it out the yard, the date of sale and so forth. In other words, it's a little condensed record for him and for you of all the relevant particulars. That is another requirement, and if you don't display those, you're liable to a penalty of $500.
No, sir.
So, again. But, alright, so... You don't do a great trade in used vehicles, and you're probably averaging about 4 a month in the new car franchise, and that would be combined Subaru and Volvo.
That's a lot. That's a lot of trucks in there. Trucks 4 vehicles per month.
I'm going to give you that.
Yeah.
An application form to apply for a licence. It's got certain requirements on it. I'd certainly suggest that you do comply with it. I think you'll find that even though you might have your personal views on the licensing requirements, you won't find that in any way will impose restrictions on the way you go about your business. Yeah. It doesn't affect competition whatsoever.
No, it doesn't affect it, it restricts it.
Well, I disagree.
Do you want to make any more comment about the facet of unlicensed dealings?
About what?
About this facet of unlicensed dealings. Do you want to make any further comment?
No, what would you like to say?
So you do admit the situation, you realise the situation, the implications?
Yeah, I wouldn't want you to think I just want to live outside the law, or I want to be... You know, I think I'm privileged, and I don't have to sort of play the game by the rules. The rules, I think, are minimum rules set down, and I think if you want to stay in business, you've got to think more about maximum rules, about getting one better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what competition's all about. I don't want to... I'm not saying, look, I don't like that I haven't joined this because I like to rip off the customers and not get into trouble. I'm not saying that because that's certainly not my intention, because that would be a good way to go out of business.
Yeah. It's just your own personal view.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I see it all the time. There's a Sunday Times, the Truck Owners Association in Australia, said that they don't believe in licensing. They don't think that truck operators should be licensed because, and they went through the reasons that it was restricting and regulating the industry, would increase the costs and, you know, all that type of thing. And they were quite right in what they said. But the same truck owners came out last Thursday night's Daily News, and they said, hey, we think there should be a new set of legislation to license insurance broking firms, because we want protection against these blokes going broke.
Yeah, well, that's...
And there we are, the trucks guys say they ought to be licensed, but they in turn think somebody else should be licensed all the way, and then today...
Well, that's the same argument, again, can be applied to the motor car deal.
Look, where do you stop with all this regulation? I think we're going to get tighter sorted or not. Today's paper also...
Well, let's deal with the industry.
Hang on, today's paper demands legislation for... look, I'm quite capable of doing a property settlement, and I do them myself until it's almost impossible to do it.
Mm.
Now that means I can't. I'm capable of settling a property myself, but the law says I've got to go to Perth or sign up some high-priced people to do what I'm quite capable of doing, and I just don't need that sort of protection.
Yeah.
And,
Well, you're obviously an astute businessman. You're aware of a lot of things.
The facility is there if people want to go to a lawyer or to go to a bank to do the settlement. It's a freedom of choice thing. But once again, we say, where is it going to stop this restriction on freedom of choice?
It's determined by demands. Now, we've got a situation where the government's faced with, we don't know how many people who have been bitten by the collapse of the insurance brokers. Okay, now, as a government, they're responsible to more than one individual. They're responsible to the people as a whole. And the number of these sort of situations being brought to their attention, they're obliged to do something like that, to license it. Okay, well, the first thing they'll probably do is make sure that the insurance brokers had some sort of cash assets. So they just, as it turns out, I believe that some of them are operating on credit over 6 months. And, that's not a good business principle.
I read that thing and I said, okay, well, there is a problem, there really is a problem with these guys, but is it going to be solved by another strata of legislation with another act?
Now, only time will tell.
I guess the real problem is that if I'm an insurance broker and I've taken your money to give it to you, I'm acting as a trust money, isn't it? And it's fraud, isn't it?
Well, I don't quite know the criminal code there. Well, it could well be.
It does fall back to fraud in a lot of cases, I agree.
And I think we've got these beautiful law courts, and I'm a great believer in police and law as control of crime. So I just wonder if we've got to look at is there a problem with our legal system that can sort of protect consumers and producers, a law court that's fair to all, instead of bringing in, because how many of these little bodies to license everyone and restrict every sort of aspect of transaction between individuals, how many is enough? Right. They're coming in faster than anything. They're certainly not going out, are they? They're just coming in all the time.
Get to the point. We've got a complaint from a Robert Godfrey concerning a Subaru four-wheel drive that was bought on purchased on the 19th of October. You said before that you maintain individual files of your purchases.
Yep.
Would you be able to get that file?
Oh,
and we've got the documentation.
Yep.
October 1979.
No, that's not it. Godfrey.
Well, around about October 19th.
Claude Henry. Bye-bye. Today is the first anniversary of the fiery descent of Skylab. The event took place.